All right. So here's a new icebreaker question for you. Ready? Uh-huh. All right. If you could have ice cream with any world leader at any time, who would it be and what flavor would they choose?
What? We gotta have ice cream?
Yeah, you gotta have ice cream.
I don't know. You know, what do you got here? What's your ice cream?
I don't know. I just came up with this question like right now. This is what you get when you ask me to come up with.
I didn't ask you to come up with a question, just we're clear. You said I will come up with a question.
All right, well then let's just start the thing. That's fine.
All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
Yeah, you know.
I deserved it. After that intro, I deserve to have my name flubbed. It's okay.
You know, I write little question cards for our Wednesday night dinners. You do, maybe I'll throw that one on there for next week.
I'm thinking, you know, I think you have to have like a theme for your ice cream flavor, right? So like who you're meeting with.
And okay,
like,
yeah.
It's like you meet with Napoleon and you have a Neapolitan, right? Which I don't think actually go together, but sound alike. And then
yeah, sure. So, yeah. Yeah, okay, so. I'm with you. Yeah, you meet with Abraham Lincoln, you need the Great Divide.
Sure.
The vanilla and chocolate mix.
Yep. Love it. Yep. Yeah.
That just, you know.
You meet with, Martin Luther, you have some sort of stout flavored ice cream, right? That could be really tasty. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
All sorts of good options.
There you go. You know. He's not really a world leader, though.
I was just thinking of people in history.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Yes. All right. Back together. No Elise today.
Nah, it's all right. Yeah,
that's okay.
We don't know where she is.
Somewhere. Yeah,
probably.
Doing her thing. Yeah.
As far as we know.
Yeah. All right. You want to jump on in here?
Let's do it. Let's go to it.
Okay. I think if the things go in the order they're supposed to go, we have talked about mosquitoes.
Okay. Yeah. So we're pre-recording this one.
Yeah.
And so if this comes out when it's supposed to come out, theoretically,
we talked about covering yourself with fat.
With animal fat. Right. This needs to come out after the animal fat episode.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Remind me of that later.
I will. Yep. So we got a new way to protect us from mosquitoes.
Okay. More mosquito protection.
If animal fat is not your bag.
Rancid animal fat, no longer necessary.
Yeah. That's not for you. And
forget DEET. Leave it at home.
Yeah.
Yep. What do you got now?
Make the mosquitoes deaf.
Deafen them, just gouge out their ears. Like, okay, I'm ready. What does making a mosquito deaf have to do with my mosquito protection?
Okay, mosquitoes mate in midair.
Okay, impressive. All right, yeah.
Sure. Yeah, it's
we've all got our skill sets. That's fine.
I assume it's like when they're trying to, you know, refuel the plane while it's flying.
Sure. Yeah. Similar. Yeah. Yeah.
But they need to be able to hear the female in order to do it.
Okay.
But if they're deaf, can't do it.
So this is mosquito birth control.
This is mosquito birth control.
Okay.
Make the mosquitoes deaf. They won't have any more babies. No more mosquitoes.
Oh, so this is like a permanent solution situation. You're like eradicating mosquitoes.
If you could make them all deaf. How do you make a mosquito deaf?
This I don't know. Has anyone conquered that part of the problem? They know we could, or if we could make them deaf, they would not be able to reproduce, but we don't know how to make them deaf.
So it's basically like introducing like a genetically engineered
deaf mosquito.
Deaf mosquito.
That would pass on.
Like, so yeah, you take a mosquito, you give it this like chemical, it, you know, and its future generations will become deaf. So.
Okay.
That not just like, let's blast Metallica. We take the mosquitoes to a bunch of concerts in their teens and early 20s.
And 30 years
later.
By
the time they're old, they got the tinnitus just buzzing in their ear. You know,
can't hear anything. Yeah. It's great.
Yeah.
Seems like a lot of work. I don't know how I feel. Like, genetic modification of any type. It's tough, right? I mean, you got to be careful.
Yeah, because what if like, you know, that mosquito bites me? And then I become deaf.
Right, yeah. Yeah. How about that? Yeah. Like,
yeah.
Or worse, like your future generations become deaf.
Because that's not worse.
Yeah. Okay.
They'll figure it out. I know what it's like to hear.
Yeah. For all of our deaf listeners, wait.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. So here's the thing.
Okay.
Learned this in this article here from Vice. Female mosquitoes are also the one that bites you.
Yeah, they're the jerks.
Yes. So are the females are the ones who spread disease, not the necessarily ones that bite. Everybody bites. Everybody bites. Females
equal
spread disease.
Okay.
All right.
So how does this help or stop the spread of disease?
Well, basically, you just, you know, you're getting rid of the
mosquito.
Mosquitoes.
So don't mosquitoes play like an integral part in like ecosystems? As annoying and awful as they are, aren't they like still important?
I don't know. Okay. I don't care.
Okay.
If we're making them deaf, we can make something that fixes, you know, what part do they do? I mean, they don't pollinate.
I don't know what part they do. I just,
unless like there's predators that need mosquitoes to eat.
Could be. I just assume that if they exist, they serve a purpose.
I don't know about that.
My logic might be flawed, but that's possible.
Yeah. All right. So there you go. Female mosquitoes. They're the ones spreading disease.
Yeah.
And the key is to make men deaf.
Male mosquitoes, not men.
Male mosquitoes deaf. Yes.
Making us deaf does not help the situation. Though then we can't hear the mosquitoes, so that's something. At least you don't
that's
get
true.
Like
when you're sleeping,
your
yeah, right, yeah, you don't get that buzz. Yeah, that's true. Nobody wants a mosquito in the tent because then you just got to deal with that buzz.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you're definitely going to get bit in the face during the night, which is...
It's also bad.
Yeah.
All right. The other method they're trying
mm-hmm.
is the sterile insect technique, or the SIT, which involves releasing sterile males so they can futilely mate with females.
Okay. So the females think that they've been mated with.
Yes.
But they've all essentially received... Yeah.
Well, I don't think the females are going to be like... Sorry, I already had a guy. You know, I've already been asked to prom. Like,
yeah, I don't know how that works.
I don't know. Like, unless you're like overwhelming sterile males.
Well, so I mean, okay, the lifespan of a mosquito is much shorter than a human.
That's
right?
Fair.
So the opportunities for mating are much more limited.
I guess like that. You know, like we're just kind of throwing it out there. You know, like. Better with the sterile guy than the virile guy.
Maybe they're firing blanks. So you know.
How do you sterilize a mosquito?
I don't want any further information on that.
Does it involve a microscope or
I'm sure
chemical?
It does. I'm sure a microscope is involved in some way, shape, or form. And mosquitoes are really small.
Yeah, but like if it's a chemical, you're just gonna spray it.
Oh, that could be. Yeah, that could be.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying there.
There you go. All right. Well, yeah, but I guess this also, what if you get bit by the sterile mosquito?
Do you become sterile?
At this point, I've already got 3 kids.
Yeah, I'm good with it.
I'm fine.
Saving me a doctor's trip.
Yeah, reality, yeah. It's preferable.
I mean, all I got to do is get bit by this mosquito. Done.
I'm getting bit by mosquitoes with nothing coming my direction already. So, you know, might as well try that.
Get
okay.
Some out of it. Yeah.
So there you go. So step one, get yourself some rancid animal fat.
Rancid animal fat, yeah.
Step two. Deafen the mosquitoes.
And sterilize the mosquitoes, yeah.
Yeah, my neighbor's probably not going to like it when I go out with a gun and just start shooting it. They're not wearing ear protection.
Is that to deafen the mosquitoes? Yes. To shoot a gun?
Yes.
Stick to the
guns are loud.
They are. I'm not arguing with the volume of the gun. I was just trying to understand if that was a sterilization technique or a deafening technique.
Both.
Okay. Two for one.
I'm that good of a shot.
Oh, goodness.
All right, let's get to our main topic.
Yeah.
From Christianity Today.
Mm-hmm.
They've been on a roll.
They've been doing some good stuff.
I'm gonna be honest. They've been writing some really good things, like from what I've been reading. So
I mean, and headline's good enough to get you to read them.
So headline good enough to get me to read them. Yeah. And that's true.
That's usually their biggest hurdle. They usually have good material. Their headlines just don't
relevant
snag
is
you.
A little more fun. They're more fun than the fun magazine.
They are.
But Christianity Today is at least evolving to more of like a thinking man's Christian magazine. Or at least a dumb person's idea of a thinking man's Christian magazine, which is right in my alley.
Hit the target demographic. Yeah. Nailed it.
Yeah. If they're coming for me, they know what they're getting. Yes.
All right. Self-awareness is important. Good for you.
Calling is More Than Your Job mm-hmm. by Stephen Zhao.
Zhao.
Yes.
Zowie. Wowie Zowie.
That's what he goes by. I got a feeling. Got a vibe from it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's start here.
Okay.
Calling is more than your job.
Yes.
What do you think?
Absolutely.
Okay.
In my case, they happen to align, but that's not always true. Right? I think, you know, when we're talking calling, I sometimes use the language vocation. I don't know if that's the language that Stephen's going
to use. Vocation will be used to, yes.
Yeah. So when I think about vocation calling, it's what is the call that God has on your life? And that will often include, but not be limited to, your occupation, right?
Yes.
So, for example, you might have an occupation as an accountant. And that might be a great gift, and maybe you do lots of wonderful things in your role as an accountant, but perhaps the calling that God has on your life is bigger than just being an accountant. Perhaps the call on your life includes serving as a member of a church team in finances, or maybe it's offering your services to another nonprofit. Maybe it's being a coach for little league teams. Maybe it's, you know, all of those can be part of the vocational experience of living into God's calling for your purpose.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into this article here.
Let's do it.
All right. when Christians talk about work, much of the conversation involves discerning God's plan for their lives.
Mm-hmm.
As someone who graduated from a Christian university, and so did I find that faith-based schools and churches often ask young adults to ponder questions like, what is God's will for your career?
Sure.
All right. I'm going to pause here.
Okay.
Because I did go to a faith-based university.
Me too.
I went to Concordia University in Austin.
I went to Capital University in Columbus, Ohio.
Okay. And I will definitely say, like, this was part of it, you know, like, what is God's will for your career? And,
yeah.
And a not even all that subtle suggestion here is the church worker mm-hmm. part of the school, their career is more in line with God's will than yes. the not church worker part of the
yeah,
career.
Yeah, so Concordia was a Missouri Synod,
Missouri
right?
Synod, yes.
Capital was an ELCA college. And so one of the differences is that Capital did not align quite as heavily with that line of thinking, right? There definitely is a stream of that, and it's out there. It just was not my experience.
I don't necessarily place it on the faculty or staff. I think it's from the student body itself.
That's fair. Yeah.
So like,
yeah.
I think like the student body had more of that mentality
okay.
of like, I'm pre-seminary, therefore this is more of a godly career than somebody who is pre-nursing.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I will definitely say that within the scope of like Campus Crusade for Christ or some of those other evangelical campus ministry organizations that existed, there was definitely a real strong thrust of that energy and of like, oh, serving Campus Crusade, serving Young Life, serving in this capacity is in ministry is more holy than pre-nursing or yeah, whatever else you got out there. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, he continues, when we discern a vocational calling, we assume that all it takes is to fulfill it is deciphering God's plan and then finding a job that fits it.
Done.
Yeah.
Piece of cake. Because deciphering God's plan is always so simple. No one's ever run into any issues with that.
That's pretty clear. The assumption is misleading at best, perhaps even harmful. Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. All on board. Yeah.
All right. And let's get into the whys.
Okay.
All right, so he's going to give kind of several like examples of why this could be misleading, and I'll go give some summaries here because I think they're interesting. You know?
Okay.
Hey, college grad sees music as her calling.
Love it.
Plays music.
Mm-hmm.
Never makes it.
Oh,
you know,
no.
Just like, yeah. Can you believe that a musician did not become Taylor Swift? It's hard to imagine.
Yeah, I can't believe it.
But basically, no long-term sustainable employment.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a job managing a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels subpar, a waste.
Yeah.
You know, she had a God-given talent, which is music, and mm-hmm. it just never came to a career.
Yeah.
A young adult feels called to work with troubled youth.
Mm-hmm.
His parents insist he takes a stable job to pay off student debts.
Ugh.
And he works in the office, and he feels like a sellout.
Parents, am I right?
Yeah.
Tell you what.
sorry,
my parents listen to this episode. Mom and Dad, I love you. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Dedicated family of missionaries.
Yeah.
There's visa challenges outside of their control.
Mm.
And they have to return to the United States.
Sounds like God didn't really trust them.
Get other jobs, yeah.
God didn't want them to share the love of Christ.
Ultimately feel like they failed God in their mission.
Yep, they did. Yeah. Because they didn't do the thing. That's the only way to love God is to be a missionary.
My wife and I know some ex-missionaries who kind of are in this somewhat similar boat mm-hmm. where they thought this was God's calling and one member of the family like is striving to do it and searching for like sponsors mm-hmm. and kind of not doing very like it's not really working out while the partner works two jobs mm-hmm. and sometimes I'm like, well, you just need to get a job while you figure this out, right? Like it's to put your partner has to work two jobs to support your family while you work no job,
right?
You know, like mm-hmm. and to try to raise money for this mission or this ministry that is clearly not working.
Yeah,
somebody just need to get a job.
Yeah.
And that's not the end of like missional work.
And it's not the end of God's calling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So those are kind of the three examples that he lists out.
I think those are great examples. I think those are places where we really see a strong track of the church lifting these up as holier-than-thou occupations or
yes.
pathways, right? And then I'm saying, yeah, if you're not doing what God called you to do for your job, then you're a failure. And that's It's not that simple. It's not that clear cut. It's richer than that, frankly. There's more opportunity to experience God than there is there.
Yeah, and he asked the question, if vocational calling is such a good and noble thing to pursue, why does it sometimes, often even, lead to so much trouble?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 100%. You know, I'm in agreement with this question and this idea.
Yeah.
You know, oftentimes, working with youth and working at camp, you know, we have like a student or somebody who's like, hey, they seem like pretty in tuned to Jesus and gifted at participating in Bible study or even speaking in front of a congregation sometime.
Yeah.
And we think they should be a church worker.
Yeah.
Like, right. Like that's the reality. Like you seem gifted in this, you should be a church worker. And oftentimes sometimes churches out there be like, that's the godly calling too.
Yeah.
Is to be the church worker.
Yeah.
What do you think about that? You know, when we do that to students, not to say we shouldn't encourage students to pursue church work.
To be clear, yeah.
Although I don't want the competition. Some of these kids are pretty good.
I think we should encourage people to consider ministry. I think I think ministry is a viable path. I think we have to be careful not to assume it's the only path, right? And so I think there's that balance of lifting up ministry to say like, hey, you might not have considered this before. I think you have gifts for this, and I think it's worth your consideration. Versus saying, I know you're thinking about nursing or accounting or whatever, but really, this is what you should be doing, right? There's a different way to sell that. I think lifting it up as a viable option versus supporting it as like the holy option, right? I think that's unfair. Because what we should be doing for our kids is encouraging them to experience God's calling on their life, regardless of what line of work they're going into, right? Are you going into temporary work to pay off student loans? Great. Where's God's calling on your life? Are you, you know, you thought you were going to be a musician, but you're working in Starbucks to, you know, do whatever, right? Great. Then where is God's calling on your life? Those things are not, those conversations don't end with, oh, this thing didn't work out. They don't end because you're not in a church, right? I think working in a church can be a way in which you answer God's calling. It can also be a way in which you're very much living far, far away from God's calling, right? Like, I mean, God's, not everyone is called to work in the church. And I know plenty of churches that have hired people or who have gone through real difficult staff challenges because people who were not genuinely called to those positions thought, oh, this is the holy thing and this is what I should do. And it ended badly for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see here. We often assume that once we identify a vocational calling or once we've identified a calling, we must find a job that fulfills it.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of says like finding the job that fulfills your vocational calling is more like home ownership, which is a nice to have, kind of a luxury. Like that's great to have, than hospitality, which is a virtue that everyone should have.
Mm, okay.
And I think that's a reasonable analogy. Maybe, you know, everybody wants their own home, but like not everybody will. But hospitality is everyone can do that. Everyone should practice that. So if you have like, I have this calling and it's not been fulfilled, that does not absolve us from like Christian virtues.
Mm-hmm.
Because those things can be maybe sometimes even more,
You
know, fulfilled in a calling that's not
the
one we think it is. All right. So sometimes we can have a sense of overwhelming pressure from unreasonable expectations. Let's talk about that. So if you feel like this is my calling, what are some unreasonable expectations you could have that because you're called by God to do that?
Yeah. Everybody else should get out of my way. It should be easy to do it if it's my calling. You could have the unreasonable expectation that everything else is kind of going to bend its will to make this possible for you.
Yeah.
I think you can just have this jaded perspective that in some ways, God is going to clear a path so that you alone can accomplish this thing. Mm-hmm. And that's just typically not how it works.
Yeah. You know, I, in class, back when I was a student, you know, had other youth director, you know, kids studying to be youth directors. And, you know, that we all had mentions of like, we felt called to this ministry. This was something that we felt like was good and valuable. We want to pursue and to honor God. And some of the people that I was in class with, I looked at it and I thought, I don't think you're going to do very good being a youth minister. Like, I just don't see it. You know, like, you don't seem, and sometimes I did field work people, and I'm like, you don't really seem to enjoy youth. And they don't really seem to enjoy you. Like, and that.
Two strikes.
And those are kind of the two most important things that you're going to kind of need to do this calling.
Yeah. Great theology is not the thing that you need in order to do great ministry.
Yeah.
Theology matters. It is not the thing you need. Yeah.
And so I think like that idea of like, well, you have an expectation of what this is going to do for you that I just don't see, you know, like I just not picking up on that vibe. And I think that we can have that of like, if I feel called to do it, one, that means I'm going to be good at it easily.
Mm-hmm.
And two, I'll be good at it even if I don't even like it. Yeah. And some of the people, I'm like, do you like studying this?
Yeah.
Because it doesn't seem like you do.
Yeah.
And spoiler alert, most of those people are not youth directors. like, and you know, the lifespan of a youth director is relatively small.
It is.
I'm like a huge outlier you on are. The bell curve by having 20 years in youth ministry. Mm-hmm. Like that's an incredible, I'm way on one end of the spectrum. Because most people it's like 2.5.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, like that's tough, you know?
Yeah. And I will say, like, so in the ELCA, we have this process for people who are exploring professional ministry, particularly as what we call rostered leaders, right? Pastors and deacons in the church. And one of the things they talk about is this process of candidacy, where you go through a real intentional process of discernment alongside of your educational time. And one of the things that they will reference on a regular basis is the sense of internal and external call. And I think a lot of times when we're dealing with what you're describing here, we're dealing with someone who has internal call, like this is what I'm passionate about, this is what I want to do, with no one outside of them reflecting that call back to them, right?
Sure, yeah.
And so one of the things that's really valuable for us is to say, not only do you see this call within yourself, but the world around you is saying, yeah, these are gifts that I see aligned with you. Yeah, these are things that I can see you being excited about, versus I'm looking at you and you don't seem to enjoy youth ministry. You say that you're like, you know, called to this. You don't look like you're enjoying this. You don't seem like you're having these relational gifts and things like that, and trying to help sift through that and explore that.
Yeah. So we got some research here.
Oh, okay.
So a study of 378 American faculty members.
Okay. Not a lot, but all right. 378.
And they kind of concluded this about having a calling. And they said, having a calling is a benefit only if it is met. But it can be a detriment when it is not, as compared to having no calling at all.
Okay.
So if like, you're like, you know, this is just a job, that's better than saying like, I have a calling to do blank and I don't get to do it.
Yeah.
And I probably, you know, I didn't see this data, but I agree. You know, yeah, I assume that would be correct. And then they also did a study of 450 musicians.
Okay.
And found that those who felt called to music were more likely to pursue music professionally, but that didn't necessarily correlate to those who were the most talented at music.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, it's not necessarily the called people were not necessarily the most talented people.
Sure.
But they were the most likely to pursue it. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. And then we have another one on zookeepers.
Okay.
Okay. Another study on zookeepers.
All right.
Okay. So research found that zookeepers with a strong sense of calling benefited from broader meaningfulness and significance in their work, but also suffered by sacrificing pay, time, and comfort.
Sure.
And they call that the passion tax.
Passion tax. Okay. So you're willing to sacrifice something because you're passionate, you feel called to it.
Yes. And I think that this is definitely true, right? And I think, you know, to say to church workers, there are church workers out there who willingly work longer hours than they should,
mm-hmm.
get paid less than they should,
mm-hmm.
and don't ask to be compensated for their efforts because of passion tax.
Yeah.
And there are also churches out there who kind of say like,
abuse that.
Who kind of say like, you are going to pay the passion tax.
Yeah.
You know, if this is a calling by God, then you're allowed to get paid less than you should, or you're allowed to work more than you should, you mm-hmm. know, like that expectation is out there. So I think that, let's talk about this passion tax for a bit, because I think this is really interesting here. So how could that, you know, other ways that we can see that being abused with this idea of calling?
I mean, yeah, I think we see this outside of the church as well, right? There are plenty of people who make less than they could because they're passionate about something.
Yes.
Or work longer hours than they might have to because they're passionate about it. And I think that's okay, right? I mean, because one thing is that we have to be clear, like, calling does not necessarily mean I'm going to be a millionaire, right? That's everyone's, you know, living into your calling does not necessarily equal the capitalist dream of I'm going to excel and achieve according to a financial gain. And so calling has to be deeper than that. I think that if you're digging into this hole without being aware that you are perhaps paying this passion tax or aren't aware of the toll that the passion tax might be taking on you or those around you, I think that's where it starts to get really dangerous. I mean, certainly the abuse of organizations of saying like, yeah, we're going to enforce this passion tax on you, I think that's really inappropriate and something that organizations need to think very clearly about. People should be, you know, Jesus says the laborer deserves to be paid, right?
Sure.
People deserve to be paid fairly for the work that they're doing. And if you think that youth ministry is the most valuable thing that's going to grow your church, you should be paying your youth workers reflective of the most valuable thing that's going to be growing your church, right? You should be thinking about that. But at the same time, I understand there are people who willingly say, I know that I could make more doing something else. And that's okay, right?
Yeah.
It's okay to say, I could make more doing something else, but this is fulfilling. This is letting me live into this. And maybe that's for a time. Maybe that's for a season. Maybe that's for your life. It's okay. The capitalist dream is not, and it's not a calling. It's just,
Yeah, I think, there are elements of passion tax that if you're following a calling that I think are reasonable. This idea of like, in a corporate world, you could be making more money.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Yeah, I agree completely. But here, you get to do something that is fulfilling for you.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that may be the tax that you're willing to pay. You know, like, I think that's a reasonable sometimes to do. I mean,
like, I like to have water come to my house and fire departments come to my house, so I am willing to pay certain taxes, right?
Yeah. Like, many teachers out there are incredibly talented, you know, creative people that in a different field, they could be making a lot of money, but they see the value in what they do. And even though I hope every state and every community wants to take care of their teachers, what they do is incredible. You know, like, the idea is like, they're probably not paid what they're actually worth in society.
Yeah.
But that's part of the passion tax. I think when it becomes an exploitive tax, that's where it becomes dangerous. And I want to highlight you and Lord of Life, I think, about this exploitation.
Well, this took a turn.
One, give me a raise.
Okay.
Just kidding. You know, we were looking at a budget this last year, and you working with the finance team and the council kind of made it a priority to include raises for our staff, even if the budget would make more sense without them.
Yeah.
And I appreciated that. The idea of like, we need to take care of our staff, even if this creates some economic anxiety for the congregation.
Sure.
And I appreciated that clarity and that that is being spoken to the congregation. Like, this matters and we will figure out what that looks like. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is a way to alleviate, you know, say like, yes, you are paying a passion tax, but here's how the congregation of the ones you're serving are doing that.
Yeah, we want to continue to support you and encourage. Yeah.
Yeah. If, you know, you're a zookeeper out there and they're like, we need you to come on Saturday unpaid to help care for these animals, or what's going to happen? That's a passion tax that I think is unreasonable.
Yeah.
But like, the idea of like, well, I love these animals, I would have to come in because I don't want them to suffer, you know? You know, I think that becomes what's really difficult there.
Yeah, it's a fine line, right?
Yeah.
I think it's one that easily can be turned towards abuse. And so as people of faith in particular, we have to be really clear on how we treat one another, right? And this goes back to the kind of the principles that we were talking about before with, you don't have to own a home to show hospitality, right? You don't have to be in professional ministry to show the Christian principles of caring for people and caring for people that work for you or, you know, alongside of you, whatever that might be. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So we got some steps to correct it.
Okay.
All right. First step, maybe to disentangle our understanding of calling from modern views of career success.
Yes.
All right. Yeah. So sometimes we assume that if we're called to a job, we ought to succeed in that job.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah. I see that.
And it doesn't mean perhaps not financially.
Yeah.
You know, especially if it's ministry. I don't think, you know, most Christians out there are not going to succeed financially compared to their, you know, secular brothers. Not everybody. Some people make pretty good money.
Some of them do.
Maybe they shouldn't. But there should be, like, success is validation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, you're going to get promotion or cultural influence or church growth.
Yeah.
And if you see those things, that's evidence of you living into your calling.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think sometimes we even see that, like, this church is growing, therefore God is a part of it.
Yes.
And sometimes you look at them like, I don't think their message is all that good. And sometimes I think it's bad.
Yeah.
You know, like, and yet they are growing.
Yeah.
And they're seeing success.
There are lots of things in this world that gain popular support that are not aligned with God.
Agreed.
Some of them claim the title of church. Right? Yeah. But they're, yeah. Just because something is growing is not a sign that God is a part of it.
Yeah. And he says, you know, success is not necessarily bad, but it can easily be twisted into idols and to turn noble objectives into pride, unreasonable expectations, and a focus on the world rather than God.
Yeah.
And I agree completely. And yeah. I think sometimes when a pastor or a church that's finding success does something and it doesn't become successful, it's mm-hmm. easy to feel deflated or defeated, or we lost our calling to what God does, you know, things like that. And I'd be like, I don't think that that's how it works.
Yeah.
You know, especially yeah. doesn't know how it works for Jesus.
Yeah, there's this great quote by Friedrich Buechner, who was a early 20th century theologian. And he says, when talking about vocation, vocation is where your deepest longing and the world's deepest need align, or some version of that, right? And yeah. so there's like this intersection between what is it that you're longing to offer the world and what is it that you're, or that the world is needing. Success is not in that line, right? Like it's not a metric that we measure that by. Yeah. And so there are lots of things that could meet that intersection point that are not successful by the world standards.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
He does also quote John Piper.
Oh,
I'm not a fan of him, but yeah, I do like this quote.
Okay.
I'll tip my hat to give to John Piper.
You get one.
I will give him his flowers on this one. Yes.
Okay.
The greatest adversary of love to God is not his enemies, but his gifts. For when these replace an appetite for God himself, the idolatry is scarcely recognizable and almost incurable.
So when the gifts of God replace the love of God himself.
When we start to love God, not for God, but for the things that God gives us.
Got it. Yeah.
And that is the hardest to, one, identify, mm-hmm. and then two, cure.
Yeah.
And I would agree with that. I think that is a far more deadly, you know, spiritual disease than there are people of a different religion attacking your church, right?
Like, yeah.
I think that is far more insidious,
yeah.
you know, than like an enemy of God.
And far yeah. more prevalent, right?
Absolutely.
I think we can look around yeah. and I think that this is lurking. If it's not already like openly apparent in your congregation, it's lurking around the corner for every congregation.
And
it's out the door.
And every right? one of us, including, yeah. you know, you and I. I think this is yep. right there, and it's so hard to detect and to see and to identify. We could say like, sometimes you're openly embracing it while condemning it. And maybe,
yeah.
and I have to be like, am I?
Yeah.
You know, like I have to look in the mirror and ask those questions.
Well, yeah. And sometimes when you read the stories of people who have gone through really horrible tragedies, yeah. right? One of the reflection points that almost always comes up in their processing is at some point they would discover they were relying on God for the gifts. Like they were fine with God because they were getting good stuff. And yeah. then tragedy strikes and suddenly God is not there, right?
Yeah.
And they're angry at God or they're abandoning God or they're abandoning their faith. And, you know, in most of these stories, they're at some point reaching a turning point and that's returning, yeah. right? But I think that's a real, until you experience God or until you experience faith without what feels like God's gifts, then you don't really know what it means.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just always right there, yeah.
All right, and then the next step.
Mm-hmm.
I just look at success, but also understanding that work, broaden our understanding of work as well as calling. So work can encompass far more than just paid employment.
Mm.
And I think that this is, you know, an important part too. Like we can be called to mentor teenagers
mm-hmm.
and not be paid to mentor teenagers
sure.
as our, you know, career. You know, by being a mentor in a church or in a school program, you could be fulfilling that calling even though it's not your full-time job.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think I would rephrase what he said a little bit to say that calling is much broader than work rather than yeah. work is broader than calling. But yes, I'm with you 100%, right? That
yeah.
Calling covers everything that you do. It's how is God active in your life? And how, so you can be working a job that maybe you hate your job, right?
Yeah.
Maybe it's a job that you're like, I just have to do this to put food on the table for my family right now because this is what there is.
Yeah.
There are still other ways in which you can be fulfilling your calling, right?
Yeah.
Putting food on the table for your family can be a calling. And maybe you hate the job, but maybe just that action of, I know that I'm providing for my family. Maybe that's meaningful, right? You know, maybe it's mentoring teenagers. Maybe it's participating in community organizations. Maybe it's, if you're that musician who never made it, maybe it's finding a way to participate in your church's music program, right?
Yeah.
And you're never going to get paid for it, but you're able to make music with other people who are passionate about making music. Maybe it's, you know, putting on free concerts in a park with friends that you meet on, I don't know, Reddit. I don't know where people meet people anymore, but
who meets anybody? I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that this is an important part. And, you said something that was going to strike something at me, but I lost it.
So, okay.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
It was wonderful.
Thanks
yeah.
for sharing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that, this idea, you know, that calling is not having to be your full-time job. Makes sense. And also the reality is, like, even if you get the calling and you're like, I was called to be a church worker and I became a church worker, I'm going to be honest, if you're out there thinking about that, there are parts of the job that you are not called to.
Yes.
Like that you still have to do.
Yep.
You know, like that when you envisioned, I'm going to do blank, and then you start doing blank, there are parts of that job you're like, this is not what I thought this was going to be. Like, this is not what I thought, or this is not what I wanted. This is not of those things, but it's still, you have to do that so that you can do the things that you do love to do.
Yeah.
And that you are gifted in, or quality. And so sometimes you have to do things you're like, I don't feel very good at, I don't like doing this, and I don't even think I'm all that good at it, but we have to do it so that I can do the things that I like and I am good at.
Yeah.
And that's every job, by the way.
It is every job. And, you know, this is, I think, one of the, this maybe takes us back to the success rung a little bit, right? That when I was the associate here at Lord of Life, Pastor Gary at the time retired, and the question that I started getting almost immediately was I going to become the senior? And the discernment process that I had to go through there was not just, did I want to do this other job? Sure. Did I want to stay here? But to realize that it's a different calling to be a lead pastor in a congregation than it is to be an associate pastor in a congregation, right? It was a different job set. It was a different understanding of my role. It was a different leadership position in the congregation. And there was different things that I'd have to say, I don't know if I'm called to that, but I'm called to this thing over here, right? Yeah. And having to sift through that. And it's not just, oh, well, that's the next step up the ladder, so I automatically should take it.
Yeah.
Right. It's not, and that's where we have to kind of like separate those two things from us. And I think at times we're a little bit better about that in the church world of acknowledging this isn't just the next rung up the ladder. I think from my limited experience of observing people from the outside, the next rung up the ladder in the corporate world often leaves people being promoted to the point of their own failure. Right. There's a, I think it's called the Peter Principle. I don't know that for sure. But it's basically everybody's going to be promoted to the level of incompetence because you're really good at this job. And so you get promoted to the next level. And it turns out you're not actually equipped or good at that job.
Sure.
But you got promoted because you were good at the job before it. And I think in the church, we maybe do a little bit better job of trying to say, you know, how does this align with my gifts? But we still fail at that all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I remember once you became the senior pastor here and or the lead pastor, I think is what we call it.
I prefer lead pastor because senior makes me feel old.
Sure, yeah.
And I'm trying to hold on to what sliver of youth I have left.
Yeah, well, I mean, at that point, I was still the youth director, and, you know, like, we had worked close together when you were the associate pastor on a lot of different things. And we both recognized, like, new things are going to be added to your plate, and that means some things had to come off, and it wasn't going to be all the things you don't like doing coming off. Like, right, like it's not like, hey, we're adding in pie to your plate, let's get rid of those
broccoli,
veggies.
Yeah, right.
Like,
see ya.
That some things you would be like, I can no longer do these things that I enjoyed doing before. And, like, I just don't have the time. And I think that that's reasonable. And I think that that was part of that calling discernment of,
it is,
like, that means it's not only the good stuff that's getting added on.
Right.
Sometimes I have to take good things off. And that's part of embracing kind of that bigger call.
Yeah. And it's letting other people do those good things, right? And and sometimes
not like the good things of nobody gets to eat the pie.
Yeah. No, that pie is over there. Nobody touched that pie.
If I don't get to eat it, nobody eats it.
It's my pie.
Yeah. He's got some other things here. I mean, we can stop whenever, but
a thrilling end. No, I think this has been really, really helpful conversation. Yeah. I think one of the things that I would throw out here, you know, this is not just a young person's conversation.
Agreed.
Right. We can be thinking about calling throughout our life, and our calling can shift throughout our life, right? I mean, perhaps you have been in a place where you've been in a fulfilling job that has felt like a fulfilling calling for a long time, and now you're at a stage of retirement and you're figuring out what's next, right? Yeah. Maybe your calling has primarily been parenting, and now you're an empty nester and you're thinking, well, what do I do now, right? Our calling shifts throughout. The things that remain consistent are those opportunities to fulfill what God is leading us into, right? There's always opportunities for us to fulfill something that God is calling us to, whether that's through showing hospitality, through showing love and kindness, through embracing others, right? There's always those opportunities. The ways in which we carry that out will shift over our lifetime, right? I used to feel called to be an associate pastor. Now I feel called to be a lead pastor. 20 years from now, I don't know what I'll be feeling called to be doing in ministry. That's just a nature of the beast. And so if you're feeling that, if you're like, I'm 60 and I don't know what my calling is, that's okay, right?
Absolutely.
It doesn't mean you have to figure it out when you're 18 and that's it forever, right? Like, it's not that. Yeah.
And the reality is for just about everybody out there who, even if you are pursuing a calling, things will shift.
Yeah.
Your family will expand. You might get laid off. You know, like, the needs of your family might change. and your spouse might need to move to a new city to expand their future career, and you have to figure out how to do that with them. And, you know, so like, it's not like I found the right job and I just worked it.
Nailed it.
For 40 years and then I retired, you know, like.
Crushed it.
Like, I don't think that really is going to exist for a lot of people anymore.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be as those things shift. But the calling of Jesus to love your neighbor and to love God as yourself will never shift. Yeah. Like, those things exist in any field and at any time and place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, this is good. I appreciate that. You know what? It just occurred to me. We did this episode without anybody on the episode who is not called into church work. But that's okay.
Maybe not me anymore. I don't know.
Oh, goodness.
Just kidding.
That was ominous. Considering this is coming out while you're on paternity leave, maybe let's not start that.
Maybe I'm not
rumor.
Coming back. Yeah.
Stop that.
Just kidding.
All right. Well, hey, if you enjoyed this episode, we'd love to hear how you've experienced God's calling on your life and where you're wrestling with that. So you can send those thoughts to beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com. And you can find all of our episodes, including those where Patrick's not on paternity leave, at beyondsundaypodcast.com.
I'll be back soon.
Maybe. We don't know when this comes out.
Presumably.
At some point.
As soon as relative.
Yes. In the grandeur of time.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.